So real hyperelliptic curves, I guess I should say what a hyperelliptic curve is and what real means in this context. So what's a hyperelliptic curve? Well, this is the equation of a hyperelliptic curve. So this is the notation we'll use. F and H are polynomials, and of course, if you don't like this even characteristic thing, then think of H as being zero, and it looks like y squared equals f of x. It's the usual thing. It's absolutely irreducible, non-singular, and of genus g. Now, what everybody is familiar with is what for our purposes, I'm going to call the imaginary model, where basically, you know, this right-hand side is monic and has odd degree. So y squared equals an odd degree polynomial. This is what everybody uses to do cryptography and so on and so forth. But there is another way of looking at these things, and that's called the real model. And so there's a bit of a technical definition. These details are actually not at all important. If you want to, again, forget about the even characteristic case, the only thing you have to remember is that the imaginary model is y squared equals an odd degree polynomial, and the real model is y squared equals an even degree polynomial. Okay? So that's the big difference, that this right-hand side and here. And then there's some other cases here. But as I said, the definition is really not important. But this is what hyperelliptic curves look like. This can be found, for example, in Andreas Enger's master's thesis and in other places. Okay, now, I want to introduce some more notation and then also get to the point of why we call them real and imaginary. So this is the coordinate ring, FQ bracket C. This is the function field. So this is the quotient field of the coordinate ring. The ideal class group, so the ideal class group is, so you take the fractional ideals in this ring, and then you define the principal equivalence on it, so two ideals are equivalent if they differ by a fractional principal ideal, and then you take equivalence classes and you get the ideal class group. Okay, so this is a finite abelian group. And then peak zero, this is notation that we already saw in Tanya's course yesterday, this is the degree zero divisor class group. And I'm only considering divisors defined over FQ. So this is the degree zero divisors defined over FQ modulo, this time principal divisor equivalent. So these are the four things that we're going to be using: the coordinate ring, the function field, the ideal class group, and the what is sometimes referred to as the Jacobian or the degree zero divisor class group. Okay, properties. And this is why we talk about real versus imaginary. I don't know why this went so far to the left there, but a lot. In the imaginary model, there's one place at infinity, it's totally ramified, so it's sort of a unique point there, a unique place. The unit group of our coordinate ring is totally uninteresting, it's just the roots of unity, so there's nothing special happening there. And the degree zero divisor class group is isomorphic to the ideal class group. And this is why divisor arithmetic and ideal arithmetic are really completely the same in that, okay? Now in the real model, it's very different. Here, the curve has two places at infinity. They are both unramified. And I'm going to denote them by infinity plus and infinity minus. And there's absolutely nothing special about calling one plus or calling one minus. I just had to give them names. So there's no longer this sort of unique point at infinity there. If you take this difference here, that's a degree zero divisor. The order of that's a very special divisor. The order of that divisor is called the regulator of the curve. Okay. The unit group of our coordinate ring now has these roots of unity in it, but then there's now a non-trivial infinite piece, cyclic piece, and the divisor of this epsilon here, this epsilon is a fundamental unit and can be taken so that the divisor of epsilon is exactly this divisor. Now this is the principal divisor, right? And how are peak zero and the ideal class group related? Well, the order of this degree zero divisor class group is regulated times, this is, I'm sorry, I forgot, there should be order bars here. So this is the regulator times the order of the ideal class group. And in generally, the order of the ideal class group here is tiny, tiny, tiny. Many times the ideal class group is principal and all the ideals are, the ideal class group is trivial and all the ideals are principal. And now by the Hasse-Wey bounds, this is exponentially large in the curve, right? This is roughly q to the g. So the regulator here is of size q to the g. And those of you who are familiar with imaginary and quadratic number fields realize now that the coordinate ring of an imaginary model of a hyperelliptic curve behaves very much like the maximal order of an imaginary quadratic number field, and similarly for real curves, right? The coordinate ring of a real model behaves very much like the maximal order of a real quadratic number field. And this is where the terminology comes from. Now, this imaginary model is quite well studied, and lots has been written about it, and many people have used this for cryptography. What I'm interested in is the real model, which is basically just a different model of looking at a hyperelliptic curves. It has some interesting properties, some very different arithmetic. how useful this is for cryptography is not clear at this point, but there's actually some interesting and nice things happening in it. And so this is, there's not that many people who know about this, and I wish more people would know about this, because it's really quite nice. Okay, ideals and degree zero divisors. So how do we represent degree zero divisors? Well, in the real model, again, it's quite well known. So in every degree zero divisor looks like this. So there's a finite piece, so this is a divisor that's only supported outside infinity, so all the points here are finite, and then to make it degree zero, you just subtract sufficiently many multiples of this divisor, and that way you get a degree zero divisor. And you see here that this divisor is completely and uniquely determined by its finite piece, and that finite piece corresponds to an ideal, and that's how arithmetic is done. Okay, now in the real model, it's actually quite different. So now, there's various ways of doing this. Here, so you have this finite piece, and now you subtract a bunch of multiples, let's say of infinity minus, you could also use infinity plus, it really doesn't matter, so then now this piece has degree zero, but now you have this sort of free-for-all here, right? You could now add or subtract as many multiples of this funny divisor here as you like, and of course if you look at what the multiples should be, well this is exactly the value of infinity plus here, so this V infinity plus is just the discrete valuation corresponding to infinity plus. So this is again a finite piece, and then you have this, and then you have this thing added here. And you see here that this divisor is not at all anymore determined by dx. In fact, every dx corresponds to infinitely many d's, right? Because you can stick in here what you like. So if you wanted to describe this divisor here uniquely, you would just give the dx. If you wanted to describe this divisor here uniquely, you would give the dx and this v infinity value. Okay? So it's a bit different. Now, under this ideal correspondence, so the dx's here correspond to ideals, to fractional ideals. Okay, so the finite divisors correspond to fractional ideals. And again, just as a note on the side, we won't be using any of this. Effective divisors correspond to integral ideals, semi-reduced divisors to primitive ideals, and reduced divisors to reduced ideals. Okay, now if you haven't seen this before, there's sort of a lot of theory, but we really won't be using this theory at all. We're going to make this very explicit in just a minute, and so you can sort of forget about all of this. Well, except we sort of use this representation. Note, by the way, that if this V infinity plus is zero, and we're going to use this in a minute, quite a bit, then, so now this part is sort of gone here, right? Then this looks almost like in the imaginary case, right? So there's this D, except there's a little minus here, but it's sort of very similar then, right? And then, in fact, if you knew in advance that this V infinity part here is zero, then you could describe d just by this finite part dx, and then you have something that's very analogous to the imaginary model. Okay, semi-reduced and reduced divisors, well, this is the definition, this is quite well known, right? The divisor is semi-reduced if, actually, this property of reduced and semi-reduced really only refer to the finite piece, but of course, in the imaginary model, the finite piece determines the whole divisor, but here, really, it means that, actually, the finite piece is basically described by two polynomials, and you can actually figure out how to derive these polynomials from the points at which the divisor is supported. We don't need the details here. So A is monic. The degree of A is actually the degree of this finite piece. A is unique. B is unique modulo A, and it's standard practice, especially working with imaginary curves, to take B modulo A, the remainder of smallest degree. But per se, you don't actually have to do that. And then you have this divisibility condition. Okay, so that's semi-reduced, and then if in addition the degree of A is, or the degree of A or degree of dx is bounded by G, then it's called a reduced divisor. So this is a reduced divisor. So this is all we need to remember about reduced divisors, is that the finite piece is represented by these nice two polynomials. So if you, at this point, you can forget anything about theory, right? So all we need to remember is these two polynomials. Now in the imaginary model, it's quite well known that every degree zero divisor class has a unique reduced representative. That reduced representative is efficiently computable, and this is how we do cryptography in this PIC zero, right? We represent divisor classes with their unique reduced representatives, and so now we have a nice group operation, and this is how cryptography is done. There's actually an analogous result in the real model, which is not nearly as well known. It's due to Paolo Sandrock from a 1999 paper in Mathematics of Computation. Every degree zero divisor class has a unique reduced representative, but now, of course, if you want to make it unique, we can't just say something about the finite piece, right, these polynomials, we also have to say something about this in V infinity plus, and the V infinity plus is in this very, very small range here. Now, generically, finite divisors have degree G, okay? So most of the time, this guy is going to be zero, okay? But not always. There are instances where you can't make him zero, okay? Now, the big difference is that it's not at all clear how to calculate this reduced representative. So it's not at all efficiently computable, right? So you can apply some sort of reduction method and you get a reduced divisor, but to get it down to this, to get the infinity piece down to this range, it's not at all clear how to do this. So this is not the way to do cryptography, right, in the real model. And plus, I mean, this would just be duplicating what has already been done a lot better in the imaginary model anyway, right? So this is not the way to do cryptography or computations. So instead, we're working with something that's called the infrastructure. It's barely visible, that little eye there. Okay, what's an infrastructure? So rather than looking at divisor classes, as done in the imaginary model, we're going to fix an ideal class, in the ideal class group. Most of the time, it's going to be the principal class. Many times, that's the only class we have. But we'll fix that ideal class. And that ideal class, it's quite well known, has a lot of reduced ideals. In the imaginary case, it has a unique reduced ideal. In the real case, it has lots and lots and lots of reduced ideals. We're going to look at all these reduced ideals. Now, every reduced ideal corresponds, we know that every ideal corresponds to a finite divisor. Now, every reduced ideal corresponds to a reduced finite divisor. And in order to make the actual degree zero divisor corresponding to that unique, we're going to assume that this V infinity value is zero. Okay, and that determines a unique divisor, which we'll call D of A. So our polynomials, A, it's now described by these two polynomials, A and B, which have bounded degree and have all these properties, and then the V infinity piece is zero. So we know this a priori. So we can now describe these divisors with two polynomials, A and B. And then they're going to look like this. They don't have a V infinity piece here. Okay, and the finite piece corresponds to this ideal A. So that gives us a bunch of reduced divisors, and they all have V infinity plus zero. And the infrastructure of the divisor class is just a collection of these divisors. Okay? Now, most of the time, I'll get ahead of myself. This is the infrastructure. Now, properties. This set is finite, because the number of reduced ideals is finite. And in fact, it's not hard to derive these bounds. The cardinality of this set is essentially the regulator. So it's bounded above and below linearly by the regulator. Now remember, the regulator is big. The regulator is usually almost as big or just as big as the order of the Jacobian, right? So this is a very, very large set, and the cardinality is essentially the same as the cardinality as the order of the Jacobian. So if you wanted to do, for example, something like cryptography in this set, at least we know it's big enough, okay? The divisors, as divisors, these divisors are all pairwise inequivalent. The ideal pieces corresponding to them are equivalent as ideals, but the divisors are all pairwise inequivalent. And in fact, each of these divisors is one of these Paulus-Rück unique representatives of some divisor class. Okay? But, of course, we're missing some. For example, if the ideal, let's assume the ideal class number is 1 for a second, then we should have the number of these Paulus-Rück reduced representatives should be exactly equal to the order of the Jacobian, which is equal to the regulator, so we should have R of those representatives. But here we only have R minus G, so we were missing a few. So what we've done now is we've taken those Paulus-Rück representatives where you actually get the V infinity plus value down to zero, and we've thrown away all of those where you can't get it down to zero, okay? So of course, I mean, it's already intuitively clear that since we've taken a group and thrown some stuff away, what we'll get is not a group anymore, right? Okay.
It's a subgroup.
No, it's also not going to be a subgroup. Nice try, yeah. Okay, and there's another property that's not too hard to prove, and that's the following. Take another reduced ideal that's equivalent to A. So take two reduced ideals in this ideal class, then they're going to be related like this with some relative generator from the function field. Then you can show that the two corresponding divisors are equal if and only if the infinity plus value of this relative generator is divisible by R. Okay? So you can distinguish divisors in this infrastructure by the infinity plus value of their relative generators. Okay? So now, we want to use that last property to impose an ordering on the infrastructure. Well, if you want to impose an ordering, we've got to start somewhere. So we fix any of those ideals and call it A1, and we're going to say, well, this is the first one. Okay? And now, We write every divisor in this infrastructure corresponds to some ideal, where this ideal AI is related to A1 by some relative generator, and you can always find the relative generator where the V infinity plus value is in this range. Because all you have to do is multiply this alpha I by a suitable power of the fundamental unit, right? And that adds a multiples of R to the V infinity plus value, and so you can always get it in this range. Now remember, the previous property said that now two of those divisors, let's say DI and DJ, are equivalent, if you use these relative generators here, are identical if and only if these V infinity values are now identical. They had to be congruent modulo R, but now of course since they're in this range, they now have to be the same. So two of these divisors are the same if and only if these guys are the same, okay? And with that, we can now define an ordering on this infrastructure, namely saying that DJ is bigger than DI if and only if these V infinity values satisfy the opposite. Now remember, these are negative numbers, okay? So minus this guy is bigger than minus that guy. And so now we can line these divisors up according to these relative generators. Okay, so we have this ordering, and in fact, we can define a distance for these divisors, and the distance is exactly this. This is now a number between 0 and R. And so we can write these divisors in order. D1 is the first one. And of course, the way we defined it, you know, if you write here A1 is equal to what? 1 times A1. So the first one has, this guy is 0. So the first one has distance 0. And as the indices increase, these distances, which are exactly these numbers here, increase. Okay, and they increase from 0 all the way up to R, excluding R. So now we have this set, this infrastructure, and it's an ordered set, and it's ordered by distance. Okay? And one thing we can do, I mean, we're still like, I mean, we have no group operation whatsoever. We have a set, now we've ordered the set. And one thing we can do is we can hop from one divisor to the next, and we're going to call this a baby step. Later on, we'll see why it's called a baby step. Okay. How do you do baby steps? Well, these are actually the formulas. This is actually not at all important. The only thing that's important is that they're reasonably efficient formulas. These are sort of the vanilla formulas. Nobody uses these. The only thing you have to remember from this is that this has linear complexity. So baby step can be done in O of G field operations because you can actually get rid of this division here if you do it right. So, I mean, these are the vanilla formulas. These are not what you'd actually use. So this is an operation that's linear. And in fact, I mean, something is known about this O constant here, right? And I'm measuring now in field operations, not in bit operations, okay? So I want to measure everything in field operations. So baby step is a linear operation. So from one divisor to another, we can jump in linear time. Some properties, baby steps preserve ideal equivalence. Otherwise, we need that to have that the infrastructure is closed under baby steps, because if all of a sudden you jump to a different ideal class, well, you'd be sort of jumping to a different infrastructure, but you need to stay in the same ideal class. So in fact, the infrastructure is closed under baby steps, okay? The QI that I just showed here are partial quotients of a certain continued fraction expansion. For those of you who know about quadratic number fields, real quadratic number fields, this will look familiar. You can use baby steps to move forward cyclically through RC, through this infrastructure. So you can start with any divisor and then you go forward. And when you get to the last one and you apply a baby step, you get back to the first one. And so that way you can actually generate the entire infrastructure. I say here not recommended because, of course, it's going to take you exponential time. Right, so you really don't want to do this, okay? And you can also do these baby steps backwards, from the I plus 1 back to the I. It's easy to derive formulas for that, so there's nothing really special about this. So think of this infrastructure now as a big circle, okay? Here's your A1, and or let's write it in devices. Here's your D1, and then you go forward D2, and so on and so forth. Okay? Now, what does this have to do with the, if there was a way, yeah. Okay, properties of the distance. Delta 1 is 0 by definition. Then there's this weird sort of quoted thing. I'll say in a minute what I mean by that. And that's, what I mean by that is this. So distances, so you can think of the distance as this piece here, okay? So the distance of D2 is this piece. And the distance of D3 is this piece, okay? Now really, the distance, what I mean by this is that if you applied a baby step to the last divisor, you know, then you get the first divisor again. So really, I'm not allowed to write this distance. But if I were, what I would get is the distance once around. So what this is saying is that this has diameter regulator, okay? And remember, the regulator is something like q to the g, right? So this has exponential diameter, but well, this is actually not so important. The next one is important. When you go from one divisor to the next, you advance at least by one and at most by g. Now, the circumference is q to the g, but you advance at most g, okay? So really, I should have drawn these things really, really close together, but you wouldn't be able to see anything. And now you realize why it's called baby steps, because you move forward in distance in these tiny little steps. That's why it's called a baby step, okay? So if this here is di, then you can think of this distance here as delta. Okay? In fact, in practice, we're going to see, in practice, this is always 1, okay? Of course, if you have an elliptic curve, it's between 1 and 1, so it's always 1. Now, the whole point is this. Yes, the distances are uniquely determined now by their finite pieces, but that doesn't mean you can efficiently compute them. So if you have a divisor d given in this, what this is usually referred to as the Mumford representation, if you have a divisor in its Mumford representation, it is completely computationally infeasible to actually find the distance. So if I have this divisor given here, down here, finding this distance is impossible. And in fact, think about what you need to do this. You know your di is related to d1 by some relative generator alpha I. Okay? The distance is the infinity plus value of that. So you'd have to somehow determine the infinity plus value of that. Now, it's actually not hard to see that calculating the infinity plus value of that relative generator is actually not much harder. It's only, say, harder by a polynomial factor than calculating this relative generator itself. Now, what have you done? You've now taken an ideal and found a generator, so you've solved the principal ideal problem, and that's believed to be a hard problem, okay? So, and in fact, if you want to do cryptography in this, your whole security is based on the fact that this is a hard problem, okay? Now, I point out, though, that if you have two divisors, if you don't know the distances, if you don't know delta I and delta I plus 1, you do know the relative distances. This qi minus 1 comes out of a baby step, so this is being computed. So while you don't know absolute distances, you always know relative distances, okay? So you always know distance advances. Okay, what else? Oh, we have to define one more thing. You want to define a divisor of a fixed distance. So if I take some number in this interval between 0 and the regulator, well, then I want to find a divisor that's close to it. Well, it might be just below it or just above it, so let's just pick the one just below it, okay? And we call this, very aptly, the divisor below R. So this is the divisor, so I don't know, if R is here somewhere, right? Here's maybe R. Well, then there's one divisor up here, and then one divisor up here. Or maybe the upper one even hits R right there, you know? And then this here is the divisor below R. And we'll see how to compute that. So this is, if you actually wanted to do cryptography, this is the kind of stuff that you need. Okay, so that's the distance. Now, I want to just say one thing. There is actually a version of a baby step in the imaginary model, and it's simply a reduction step. I mean, I don't know, maybe some of you recognize these formulas. If you have a non-reduced divisor and you want to reduce it, then this is sort of essentially what you apply. And just in order to have unified terminology, I'm going to also call that a baby step. Now, what you can also do is you can apply in both models, you can apply baby steps to non-reduced divisors, to semi-reduced divisors. Semi-reduced divisors also have a Mumford representation like this. It's just that the degree of A may not be small. And then if you apply at most this many baby steps, then you're going to get a reduced divisor, which in the imaginary case is unique. So it's the same arithmetic, okay? So for example, if this is the sum of two reduced divisors, then the degree, they both have, the A's of these guys have a degree at most G. When you add the divisors, you get something that has degree at most 2G. So if you plug this in, you get 2G minus G over 2. So at most this many baby steps go from a divisor that's the sum of two reduced divisors to actually a reduced divisor. Okay, and we'll get more about that. Divisor addition, well, Cantor's algorithm is quite well known. We don't really, these are the formulas. This is all sort of, you know, you don't add them via points, you add them via these Mumford representations. The details here are not important. Now I want to talk about giant steps. We eventually want to have, I mean, if you want to do discrete log-based cryptography in something like the infrastructure or do any kind of other arithmetic, we're going to need something like a group operation, right? So we're going to need something that's analogous to what is done in PIC0. right? For now, all we know is to hop from one divisor to the next, but we don't know. And then we can add two divisors, but of course the result is not going to be reduced anymore. So you're not going to be in your infrastructure anymore, okay? So we have to find something. So giant steps. We denote giant steps by this, so you apply it to two divisors. And the definition in the imaginary model, this is quite well known, if d prime and d double prime are the unique reduced divisors representing two divisor classes, then this guy is the unique reduced divisor in the class of the sum. Okay? And so that's a definition of a giant step that where you don't even need any arithmetic. Okay? Now, how do we do this in the real model? Well, we kind of do the same. Whatever that means. So I mean, I'm sort of cheating here because I'm defining this like a black box, but then I'll say apply the same black box. So really in practice what is done, well, yeah, okay. So there's various ways of doing this. You can use Cantor's algorithm with subsequent baby steps. So I'll say something about this in a minute. So what you would do in the imaginary model is, well, in both models you would just add the two divisors using the Cantor algorithm that I just sort of flipped over. And then you apply baby steps to get the reduced divisor. And we know that so many baby steps then get you a reduced divisor. There's a faster algorithm called NuComp that I probably won't have time to talk about, which is another way of doing this. And then, of course, what's done in cryptography in the imaginary model is for low genus curves, there are actually very nice explicit formulas that sort of bunch this the divisor addition and reduction together. And here's some references for this. We're currently working on the same thing in the real model, but we're not even close to getting there. So, I mean, it takes a while to do this. So, this is how to do this, okay? In any case, the running time of a giant step, regardless of how you do it, is going to be quadratic in the genus. The baby steps were linear in the genus. So again, and again, there's stuff known about this O constant here, but we don't have to be concerned with this. Okay. So if you do, for example, giant steps a la Cantor, what do you do? Well, you first compute the sum using Cantor's algorithm, and then you apply at most this many baby steps to get, in the imaginary case, the unique reduced divisor in the class of the sum. And in the real case, for example, what you could do is you wait till you get the first reduced divisor. At some point, you get the first reduced divisor. Now, in the real case, you could keep doing baby steps, and that would get you all around the infrastructure. But let's just say we'll stop at the first reduced divisor. So this is one way. So this is what I mean when I say we do in the real model exactly what is done in the imaginary model. So this is how you would do this with Cantor, for example. And again, for those of you who know this stuff from number fields, step two amounts to computing part of a continued fraction here, where, yeah, this is not so important. Now, what happens is when you do divisor addition, so you add two reduced divisors, so then your operands, your A's and B's, the degree increases from G to 2G, and then when you do reduction steps, they sort of slowly go down from 2G to 2G minus 2 to 2G minus 4 and so on to G. I'm going to skip over the NuComp slide. NuComp is simply a way of, what I just said is this, you do the divisor addition and the degrees of your operands double, and then you do the reduction and they start shrinking again. And NuComp is a way of avoiding these double size intermediate operands, but I think I don't know that much time, so I'll skip this. So let's see if we could actually do cryptography in this. So I stress this is not just for cryptography, this is really meant as sort of an arithmetic framework on the real model of a hyperelliptic curve, which we could maybe use for other things. And so now the big difference is, what we'll now do is let's just focus in on the principal infrastructure. Many times that's the only infrastructure that you have, but in any case, let's focus on that one. And what we'll do is we'll do something very natural. Remember, we have to fix the starting divisor. Well, let's just fix the starting divisor like this. It's the trivial divisor. The corresponding ideal is the trivial ideal. That's sort of a natural choice, right? So then, this is your principal infrastructure. I'm going to omit the subscript here. And the distance of each of these divisors is now simply the negative of the infinity plus divisor of this generator of this ideal. So now you don't have relative generators anymore. These are actually honest to goodness generators. Okay? So that is then the distance. It's basically just the negative of the infinity plus value of this guy. Where these generators, again, are chosen to have the distance in the correct range. Okay? And here's some properties. So the first distance is always zero. This distance is always g plus one. That's not hard to show. And then they keep going, and remember what I said is they keep going, and they always increase by something that's between one and g. Okay, and most of the time it's one. Okay, so we already said this earlier. And now, well, our operation is supposed to be giant steps. Okay, so this is sort of an analogy to the imaginary model. We now want to use giant steps on the infrastructure. So what, I mean, we need sort of properties, like, I don't know, what is it closed under, is it associative, and so on and so forth. Well, it's closed under conjugation or inversion. If you take the conjugate of an ideal, or the inverse, the inverse of the ideal class, well, this is the Montfort representation, and since, of course, the conjugate or inverse of a principal ideal is, again, principal, your infrastructure, your principal infrastructure is closed under this. It's closed under this quote-unquote inversion operation. And in fact, you even know what the distance is. So, well, you don't, actually, because you don't know what this distance is. But if you knew this distance, and if you knew the regulator, then you would know this distance. So what this means is that if this is, again, your cycle, and this is your A here, then the distances, remember this degree A here is going to be pretty small. This is Q to the G, this is G. So forget about this for a second. So what this is saying is that the distance of an ideal and the distance of its conjugate, or the distance of a divisor and the distance of the divisor that corresponds to the conjugate, they add up to the regulator. So if A sits here, or D sits here, let's say D of A, then D of A bar sits essentially here. So how do you call these things? Antipodal or whatever the word is. Okay. So that's that. So it's closed under that operation. It's also closed under giant steps. Why is it closed under giant steps? Well, because the product of two principal ideals is again principal. Okay? So, and divisor addition corresponds to ideal multiplication, right? So when you do Cantor's algorithm, you get a divisor, and then if you do reduction on that, so you multiply your ideal, so your ideal stays principal, and now if you apply baby steps, that preserves ideal equivalence, so in the end you end up with a principal ideal again, so you stay in the principal infrastructure. And here's the reason why it's called infrastructure. It has a structure. It doesn't have a group structure, but it has a structure, and this term stems from Dan Shanks, who actually first observed this behavior in terms of binary quadratic forms. When you apply a giant step, what we would really like is, if you apply a giant step, the two distances just add. That would be nice. Well, it ain't quite that nice, but when you do a giant step, what happens to the distances? Well, they add, but then there's a little bit of a shortfall here. And the shortfall can be shown to be in this range. So again, what does that mean? I'm sort of running out of circle room here. If here, this is your D prime, so here this is this distance, and let's say here's your D double prime, then, and now you want to do a giant step. So what you do is you take the distance of the double prime and you add this piece here, so you land roughly here. Okay? Now, this, I just sort of added them, but think about it again. The circumference here is Q to the G, but the error by which you're off from the sum is only up to G. So again, the error when you add those two distances is only logarithmically small. So giant steps are almost additive under distances. So that's the structure that you have on the infrastructure, and this is why it's called on the principal infrastructure, and this is why it's called the infrastructure. Okay. So
is there any way to know what D is?
Yeah, and D is actually efficiently computable with the giant step. So again, the relative distances, you don't know these distances, but this relative distance here, this relative distance error, you know, you can actually compute that. Okay, that comes for free with a giant step. Okay?
If you can compute, you can use baby step forward or backward to compensate and come back with the exact value?
That's exactly what we'll do, and that's exactly how you compute the divisor closest to a given number that I defined earlier. That's exactly right, that's exactly the idea. Okay, so once again, the relative distances are known, the absolute distances are not known. You also see now why it's called giant steps, right? Because when you do a giant step, well, you leap through this infrastructure in these giant distance steps, okay? Okay. But, bad news, it's not a group. It's not associative. So if you just use giant steps for Diffie-Hellman, you know then Alice does her thing and Bob does his thing, and in the end, they certainly don't have the same key. So this doesn't work, right? Okay. So we have to do something different, okay? Now, in order to sort of see what we can do here, let's review how scalar multiplication is done in the Jacobian of an imaginary model. So you input a divisor D and a scalar, and we're going to use non-adjacent form. Whenever you get inversion for essentially free, you use non-adjacent form, right? So that means these BIs, they don't have to be 0 or 1. They could be 0, 1, or minus 1. But no two consecutive BIs are non-zero. So if you encounter a non-zero digit, a 1 or minus 1 digit, then the next one has to be 0. And this is a sparser representation. You can prove that rather than on average 1/2 of these being non-zero, only 1/3 of these are non-zero. So this is a standard thing that's used in elliptic curve cryptography and hyperelliptic curve cryptography. The output is the reduced divisor in the class of n times d, and this is the standard binary and add algorithm, right? So you initialize, and for every bit you double, and then if you find a, if you get a non-zero bit, you do a giant step. If it's 1 with this, and if it's minus 1 with the conjugate, okay? So what is the number of operations here? Well, you do L doubles and L over 3 Ls. Okay, so this is the number of giant steps, adds and doubles that you would do in the imaginary model. Now, how would we do this in the real model? Well, we do it exactly sort of the way you suggested. Now, if you think about cryptographic protocols, they are always two scenarios. In discrete log-based cryptography, there tend to be two scenarios. There's always a scenario where both communicants start with the same divisor, or ideal, or point, or whatever it is, and then there's a scenario where they start with different ones. So, for example, Diffie-Hellman round one, they start with the same divisor. There's this public divisor, okay? Diffie-Hellman round two, they have different devices. So let's first, and I call these scenarios the fixed-based scenario and the variable-based scenario. So the variable-based scenario we'll look at first, that's the one that corresponds to where they start with different devices. So here, the real model would be this, one of these infrastructure devices and a scalar and NAV, and the output divisor would be the divisor just below this. Okay, again, you don't need to know this distance here, you can just compute this. And this is the algorithm. Everything in black is exactly as you do in the imaginary case. Everything in red is what you add. And what you add is exactly what you suggested. You apply these little baby steps unless you are where you actually want to be. Okay? So remember, every time you do a double and add, you're close to the sum of the distance, but you're not quite there yet. So you may have to do a few baby adjustment steps. And at most 2G of them, according to this infrastructure thing. So what is the number of operations here? Well, the black one, again, L doubles, L over 3 adds, is exactly what's done in imaginary curves. But then you have these extra baby steps. And how many are there? Well, there's L of these adjustment steps here, L over 3 here. So that gives you 4L over 3. And in each of these adjustment steps, you have to do roughly some constant multiple of G baby steps. So this is clearly going to be somewhat slower. Okay, it's slower than the imaginary curve. So this is not so good. Okay. Now, what do you do in the fixed-based scenario? In the fixed-based scenario, what you actually want to do is you want to calculate the divisor below n, okay? Because when you do, for example, Diffie-Hellman, what Alice is going to start with is she's going to compute the divisor below A, and then Bob's going to compute the divisor below B, and that they use this algorithm. And then Alice now has the divisor below B from Bob, even though she doesn't know what B is, and she knows her A, and then using this first algorithm, she computes the divisor below A times B. And then Bob does the same thing. So this is how you would use these two algorithms. So here we don't need the scalar in NAV, we need this actually in NAV. And remember, G plus 1 is the distance of D2. So what you do is, you first compute the divisor E prime below S times delta of 2. So you call the previous algorithms with scalar S and input divisor D2, and then you get this, okay? And now you apply this many baby steps until you get actually below n, okay? So what do we do here? Well, you have to start with this division with remainder here, and then you do all the operations from the previous algorithm, and then you have to do baby steps here, and how many? Well, what is the remainder when you do this division? Well, it's at most g, so you have to do at most g baby steps. So this is even slower, right, than what we are. So this is really no good. Now, one of the things we can do, what we were looking at, is we have two operations. We have giant steps and baby steps. And the baby steps are faster than the giant steps. Why can't we use the baby steps for some of this to make it less expensive? That was sort of the idea. Okay? And before I get into the idea, there's a heuristic that we apply to our fields. And it goes like this. We'll use this notation now, d to d plus as a baby step forward and d to d minus as a baby step backwards. We'll use this from now on. And here's the heuristics. With probability 1 of O of Q inverse, remember, for cryptography, Q is really big, right? So this is like essentially 1. We have the following. Distance advances on baby steps are always 1. So your distances go like this. You start with distance 0, you jump to g plus 1, and then you go in steps of 1. So 1, g plus 1, g plus 2, g plus 3, g plus 4, and so on and so forth. So remember, theory says they're bounded between 1 and g. The heuristic says they're always 1. Okay. Second heuristic says something about giant steps, namely that this error d here, remember, theory says it's between 0 and 2g. We claim it's always the ceiling of g over 2. Now, where do these heuristics come from? Well, first of all, you check this numerically, and the fact is this always holds. I mean, this is always true, right? But you can also sort of give a heuristic explanation to this. Remember, what were these distance advances? Well, if you, way back when I said these distance advances are the degree of these qi's. The qi's are partial quotients of a continued fraction expansion. And there's a heuristic that says that partial quotients of continued fraction expansions have degree 1 with this probability. And so this is where this comes from. Now remember, what do you do with giant steps? You do your, think about Cantor for a second. You do your divisor addition, but then you do, again, continued fraction steps. Now remember, this is the number, this is the maximum number of steps that we had to do in order to get a reduced divisor. And now from the previous heuristics, or from this idea that the degree of partial quotients is always 1, each of these steps advances the distance by 1. Well, so this is exactly the distance, you know, so you do g over 2 steps, each step advances you 1, while the total advance is g over 2. So there's also a heuristic explanation for this behavior. And I mean, we did tons of examples and it always holds. Okay, consequences. Well, first of all, relative distances now are related to indices like this. Absolute distances, sorry. So you can pin down distances exactly. You can now compute exact distances. You can also compute the order. This is the exact number of reduced ideals in your infrastructure. And all the finite pieces of every divisor now have degree d, which means your reduced divisors, it says it's at most g, but according to the heuristics, it's only exactly g. And finally, since we now can pin down distances exactly, we don't have to keep track of relative distances anymore. They're sort of given for free by all this. So we save ourselves a little bit of computation. You don't have to keep track of distances at all anymore. Okay, so we from now on assume this heuristics, and now we do the following. So let's first look at the variable-based scenario. What was the problem with the variable-based scenario? Well, we did our usual double and add or double and subtract, and now there we always had to do these nasty adjustment steps. We'll get rid of all of them at the expense of a bunch of baby steps at the beginning. In the fixed-based scenario, we replace all our adds and subtracts by baby steps. So that's going to be a big savings. We still do the doubles, but instead of doing these adds of quadratic complexity, we do baby steps of linear complexity. And again, we get rid of all the adjustment steps, but we need to compute two divisors, which can easily be pre-computed. One is the divisor d with index d plus 3, so you just apply a bunch of baby steps and get it. And then there's this divisor, and this is also, again, you apply a bunch of doubles and adjustments to get to this distance, and then you apply some more baby steps. And these are pre-computed, so we don't care how much they cost, and you include these in the domain parameters of a cryptographic protocol. Again, I mean, now there arises the question, does that give something away in security? Well, we don't believe so. I mean, there's no reason why, but again, this is not. Okay, what do you do in the variable-based scenario? So again, it's the same input. You now output the divisor not quite of distance n delta of n times this distance, but you add this g over 2 thing here. But who cares? You know where you are now with this divisor. And here's the algorithm. So from step 2 to 4, it looks exactly like NAF scalar multiplication in the imaginary scenario. It's just that at the beginning there's something different. You don't initialize with divisor E. You initialize with the divisor that's d baby steps into the infrastructure. Because remember what happens, we had these adjustment steps. In each case, we always had the shortfall of distance, and then we had to do these adjustment steps. So what you do is, you do the adjustment once and for all at the beginning. Okay? And the number, the amount of adjustment, the number of baby steps, note this is independent of this L here. It's independent of the size of the scalar. Okay? So the number here, the running time, is L doubles, L over 3 adds, which is like the imaginary one, and then you have these d baby steps, so it's a little bit slower. Okay, and of course you have to put some work in to show that what this algorithm gives you is in fact the divisor of this distance, but anyway, that can all be proved. Okay, now in the fixed-based scenario, what do you do now? You have this pre-computation, you have your scalar, and now you compute the divisor of distance n. This is always going to exist now because your distances only jump in steps of one. And here's what you do. So normally this was double and add, but now it's double and baby step. Okay? So you initialize with this divisor. So you make up for some of your adjustment at the beginning and initialize with this divisor. And now you always do double and baby steps. But now it turns out, where do you want to go? You want to go to distance n, right? No, you've gone to this distance. You're way too far. Okay? So at this point, you're way too far. Well, and you're so far that if you wanted to go backwards, you'd make the whole thing exponential. So how do you get further? Well, you do another giant step. And it turns out the giant step that gets you to distance n is exactly a giant step with the conjugate of this divisor. So you do this huge, you do sort of go once. You're now too far for n, so you go once around the infrastructure to get to n. Okay? And so you can show that, again, that this, in fact, does give you the divisor of distance n. The expected number of operations is now L doubles, 1 add, and L over 3 baby steps. Okay? So if you do a comparison, an operation count, where you just, in the fixed-base scenario, you start with any random divisor, then you get this operation count. So in the imaginary, so the number of doubles is always the same. The difference is in the add. So the imaginary needs L over 3 adds. The real variable-based scenario is L over 3 adds and some baby steps. And the real fixed-base scenario, you just have this one giant step at the end and L over 3 baby steps. So this is great. The real fixed-base scenario on a random divisor should be much faster, right? And I mean, in a naive implementation, it is much faster. This is, however, a bit of an unfair comparison. Because, of course, now, I mean, it's been suggested not to use a starting divisor, a random divisor, but to use a degenerate divisor, a special divisor, for example, the divisor of a point. And when you do that, of course, your giant steps, your adds, are going to be much faster because you can do these with very, very special formulas because it's a degree one divisor. So really, the fair comparison, if you did that, in the variable-based scenario, it makes no difference. But in the fixed-based scenario, really what you have to do is, so these four Japanese suggested this, to use this degenerate base divisor. So the doubles are, again, the same. But what you have to compare is, in the imaginary scenario, L over 3, essentially point additions now, right? You add a divisor of degree 1. Compared to 1 add and L over 3 baby steps. Which one is faster remains to be seen, right? I mean, because we don't have these explicit formulas that we can't really say. Okay. Now, if you did a very naive analysis, and I mean, this is very naive, okay? Let's say the cost of a baby step is negligible compared to a giant step. Well, it's linear. The other one's quadratic, which for large genus, that's probably pretty accurate. Let's say the cost of giant steps are the same in the real and imaginary scenario. So we use Cantor or we use Newcomb, that's the same for both, or let's pretend we have explicit formulas in the real model. Then, and let's assume the random fixed base, we start with a random divisor, not with a degenerate divisor, right? Then you would get the following analysis. Well, in the variable base scenario, the real model should have the same speed as the imaginary model, because there's just a few extra baby steps that you have to do. In the imaginary model, there should be a factor of 3/4, right? Because the number of giant steps, doubles and adds bunched together, or I guess we're assuming sort of making another assumption. I'm going to just lump doubles and adds together and pretend they cost the same. Okay, so then you get L doubles L over 3 adds. We get L doubles and just some baby steps. So one is 4 L over 3, and the other one is just L. And so there's a speed up ratio of 3 over 4. So the real model should be about 25% faster on that, just in terms of counting giant steps. Not in terms of actual details, right? So for example, Diffie-Hellman, you have first round fixed-base scenario, second round variable-based scenario. One's equal, one's a factor of 3/4, so the whole Diffie-Hellman implementation should be faster by a factor of 7/8. Signature generation, where you only use the fixed-base scenario, you should be faster by a factor, by 25%, by a factor of 3/4. Something like IES decryption, where you only use the variable-based scenario, you should be roughly the same. Okay, so that's incredibly naive, but that sort of gives you an idea. So now the reality is, so we did a numerical implementation. We did up to genus 6. Now, of course, for cryptography, that's sort of not the right thing to do. But again, we wanted to just explore this as an arithmetic framework for maybe other applications as well. So that's why we wanted to use some larger genera as well. We picked our queues with the standards. These are the standard NIST security levels, you know, just to pick some reasonable parameters. And we compared them using Cantor's algorithm, because we only wanted to look at it in this framework of counting doubles and adds. And we're treating the doubles and adds at this point as a black box operation. Now, of course, again, in cryptography, you can't do that. But at this point, that's the comparison that we wanted to do. And if you look at the ratios, so remember, here the ratio should be just over 1, and here the ratio was predicted to be 3/4, okay, by this naive model. So you see, of course, that the naive model is very naive, because, of course, you can't neglect baby steps, and you can't neglect that one extra giant step, and so on and so forth. So it is very naive. But at least it's sort of in the correct ballpark figure. It's not like way off, right? So 0.78 gets pretty close to 0.75, right? Okay, so, and the ratios, not surprisingly, get more favorable towards the real scenario as the genus goes up, because then, of course, the difference between O of G and O of G squared makes much more of a difference, and also as these numbers go up. So it's better for the higher, so that's actually good, because, of course, we'll need higher security as time goes by. Right? Okay, so this is a proposed framework. Now, if you wanted to do cryptography with this, of course, one of the things you have to look at is, well, what about security? What about the underlying DLP? If this real model is way more secure, well, then maybe you're willing to take into account slower arithmetic. But if it's way less secure, then you just want to throw it away. Well, I'm not going to talk at all about security in the sense that, for example, Neil was talking about yesterday. I'm just going to look at the discrete log problem and what we know about this computationally. That's all I'm going to look at. So in the imaginary model, you have the Jacobian DLP, the degree zero divisor class group DLP. So given the reduced divisor D and the reduced divisor in the class of this, you want to find the scalar. That's the standard, right? We saw the same thing yesterday on the elliptic curve cryptography. This is what you want to do. What's the corresponding DLP in the real model, the DLP in the infrastructure? Well, I'm going to give you 4 equivalent formulations. They're all equivalent in the sense that they're all sort of polynomial time reducible to one another. So the first one is this. This one would break the variable distance scenario, right? If you have a divisor and a divisor E that's below here, without knowing this delta of defined n, if you could break this, then you could break the variable distance scenario algorithm. Okay? Here's another one. If you could do this, then you could break the fixed distance scenario algorithm. Given n, find the divisor below n. Okay? A simpler formulation is actually, you can show that this is equivalent. Given a divisor E in the infrastructure, find its distance. It's not hard to show that that's actually equivalent. Okay, so you have to find the distance. So this is why it's good that if you have a divisor, it's computationally hard to find the distance, because otherwise this wouldn't work. And I mentioned already before, what's equivalent is the principal ideal problem. Given a reduced principal ideal, find a generator. Right, and because it's not hard to see that from this distance you can actually find this relative generator. Well, in this case, it's actually an absolute generator. So these are all the same. And now what happens usually is this. The hardness of these two problems really seems to be the same. And in practice, what seems to happen is every time someone develops some sort of algorithm for this Jacobian DLP, or maybe an improvement to an existing algorithm or something, then that improvement or that method is adjustable to the real scenario. And the algorithms that you use, the sub-exponential algorithms for large genus and some of the other algorithms for small genus, it seems to be, it's really the same, right? So really asymptotically they are the same, so that you don't lose or gain anything in security. Okay. Present and future work. So this work, this is all, right? I'm certainly at this point not advocating to sort of go out there and make this into commercial cryptography or anything like this, right? So there's still a lot that needs to be done. The idea really was that we have this alternative arithmetic framework. We have a second operation on our infrastructure, which is faster, and we want to somehow exploit the second operation for various arithmetic applications. For example, cryptography, but maybe also other stuff, just computing in the Jacobian or whatever, right? So that was the idea behind it. Work in progress. I didn't say anything about NuComp. NuComp is this algorithm that's faster than Cantor, and we're currently sort of analyzing this in detail and writing it all up and doing an explicit operation count and so on and so forth. But one thing that we really need is explicit. It's not credible to treat doubles and adds as black boxes, right? In order to do credible cryptography, you have to actually worry about how to implement them. Now, the baby steps, I think they're pretty much as optimized as they can be. But the giant steps, you know, we need to have the same sort of optimal framework as in the imaginary scenario where you have really fast explicit formulas for genus 2 and genus 3 curves. And there's a bunch of us, a number of students and other people that we're working on this currently. Okay, now some questions. So, I mean, this is a workshop on open problems, so at least I should finish with some open problems, right? Okay. Can we do the opposite? So I propose to use this whole framework sort of for constructive cryptography or constructive algorithms. Can we maybe use it destructively? You know, can we use it to speed up the infrastructure DLP? The answer is almost certainly, right? Or maybe even something like computing the order of pig zero, you know, computing the regulator, you know, various other computational problems on devices. Can we use this? And the answer is almost certainly, and it's just a matter of sort of figuring it all out, right? But here is actually something, now if you could do this, I mean the algorithms for this are all exponential and sub-exponential, and of course the speed up you'd get is only polynomial. But hey, it's still a speed up, right? Here's another question, and this is actually something that we're looking at, and this is actually much more interesting. Can we convert one of the discrete log problems to the other one? Can we convert the imaginary discrete log problem to the real one and vice versa? And the reason I'm saying this is this. It's actually very easy to convert a real model to an imaginary and vice versa. There's a very simple variable transformation that lets you do this, right? Of course, the function field doesn't care which model you're in, and neither does the Jacobian, right? So use whatever model, okay? So you can always convert one of these imaginary curves, one of these traditional hyperelliptic curves to a real one, and if there's an FQ rational point on an imaginary model, you can convert it back. So that's not hard, that's well known. Now this Paulus Rook paper that I cited earlier actually does something more. It actually tells you how to convert the Mumford representation of divisors from a real model to an imaginary and vice versa. So now you can actually translate divisor arithmetic. Now what would you need to do in order to convert the imaginary DLP to the real DLP? So you have two reduced divisors in the Jacobian. Now you apply this magical transformation that I'm proposing here to get to the real model. For simplicity, let's assume that the ideal class number is 1. So everything ends up in the real infrastructure. So now, you know, your one divisor from the imaginary model ends up right over here, and the other one ends up here. Now, in the imaginary model, they're going to be related here. So this is going to be some D, and this is going to be some ND, and then you want to find N, right? That's the DLP. So now the hope, of course, is that if this is D and this is ND, then this N is going to tell you something about where these divisors are, right? And where they are relative to each other. And then hopefully, if we can find that translation, so to speak, then maybe we can use this faster arithmetic framework to solve the DLP in the real model, but then get the answer in the imaginary model. And thus actually speed up a little bit DLP computation in the imaginary model. Now, this might be complete pie in the sky, I don't know, right? But this is sort of what we're looking at.